Time to get the local view. He's the fine columnist for the Register Guard, often found on the cover of the sports section. Catch up on what you've missed online, registerguard.com, on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how are you?
Hey, Steve, I'm good. How are you doing?
Great. How was your Christmas?
Christmas was wonderful. We did just kind of a quiet Christmas at home with the family, and now we're on the road up to Idaho to visit my wife's family. So we're getting the full experience.
On the road again, huh?
That's right. Well, if you read the column about our last adventure, you know that's kind of a dangerous situation for us.
Well, I want you to text me every 10 minutes just so I could keep track on you.
Just check in. It's like having a teenager.
I swear it's exactly what I was thinking. Now, we know the Meek clan expanded by a daughter, and you alluded to the column Sunday. So for those who didn't catch it, and I'm happy to report you can tell the story, so you decide no better time to emphasize a family tradition and cut your own tree. And did you run into any trouble?
Well, so I'll spare you the full, long, laborious story. But to summarize, yeah, the day our tradition is in our family, the day after Thanksgiving, we go out and cut a Christmas tree. This year, our daughter was born the day after Thanksgiving, so we had a good excuse for not doing it this year. But somewhat foolishly, I insisted that we should still do it. So we went out there with our newborn when she was three days old, and our son, who's three now, and drove out into the forest to cut the tree. Long story short, the truck wouldn't start, and through the kindness of a lot of people, we were able to make it home, but it was quite an adventure.
It sounded like it. I think a new rule moving forward, if you have a child who's not triple-digit hours old, no going into the woods. Could I get that from you at least?
That would have been a smart thing. And so this is funny. So today we're driving to Idaho. This morning we're going through Portland. And we're getting on I-84, which, you know, they've had some snow and ice, so it's pretty slow going. The gas gauge was literally at E, and I'm thinking, okay, I got to get gas here before we get out of civilization. And as I'm thinking that, I'm looking in the rearview mirror, and the last gas station is disappearing behind us, and it's like 20 miles to the next one on, you know, snow and ice and 30 miles an hour, and thinking, something, you know, somehow I've got to figure out how to be a little smarter in my traveling, because I am not on a good streak here.
Absolutely not. You like that Seinfeld episode where you're challenging E on the gas gauge, which I don't think you want to do. Well, I'm glad you're all well. Next year I'll be sending you a certificate for a delivered tree. But I want to get to the notice of allegations that Oregon got covering three sports. You covered it Friday. So what are the basketball programs in essence charged with? And like you wrote, considering some of the other shenanigans around college sports, does this feel like the NCAA is trying to use a machine gun to kill a mosquito?
Well, that's not a bad way to put it. You know, in terms of some of the allegations we've seen in college basketball, what Oregon is accused of doing will seem like pretty minor stuff. You know, they've got a couple in men's and women's basketball, they were accused of having basically strength coaches who were doing coaching responsibilities in practice, which, you know, I don't think that's going to provoke a lot of outrage from many people. But, you know, it's a letter of the law type thing. It's a rule for a reason. It's significant anytime you get a notice of allegations from the NCAA. You know, that's not a good feeling. That's not where you want to be. But I guess from Oregon's perspective, they have to feel okay that, you know, it wasn't something more significant than that.
I'm talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. So, wow. Does somebody else want to jump on and give a couple of thoughts on the Vegas Bowl?
Yes.
I think my 3-year-old may be angling for his own weakest spot.
Oh, that's beautiful. So the track and field deal, the issue centers on a former sprinter, Jasmine Todd. You tweeted a story from Flow Track. So, again, I feel like a lot of people this time here might not be up to date. So if you would, the allegations involving her academics, maybe a little confusion. And, man, her career came to an abrupt end.
Yeah, well, I remember when that happened, and I think everybody at the time realized something fishy had to be going on there because she basically got pulled off the track at the regional meet, if I recall correctly, right before she was going to run and told she was ineligible. And then it came out that basically she'd had an agreement with a professor that she wouldn't be able to turn in her work on time because of the track schedule. So the professor agreed to change her grade from an F to a passing grade when she turned her work in,
right.
Which I guess you can't do. I guess that's frowned upon against university policy to do that. So when it was uncovered that happened, then they had to declare her ineligible. You know, I think that the good news for Oregon in that, if there's good news, is that nobody in athletics was named as having any part in that. You know, it's not
sure.
Like the coach went and told the professor to change the grade that we know about that. No, that has not been alleged in any of this. So it seemed like it was just kind of an isolated case of maybe a professor who didn't know the rules and was trying to do a favor for a student and didn't realize that it was something that the NCAA wouldn't approve of.
And actually, they pulled her from the starting block. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I saw you guys voted for the top 10 sports stories of the year locally. I clearly thought the Yankees getting within a win of the series would be one. I agree. The Oregon men making the Final Four should have been first. I'm kind of curious. You got to vote. Was it that close of a vote? And was that your number one?
Yeah, that was number one for me. I think it's a close conversation between the Final Four and Willie Taggart's one and done season. But coaches come and go. I know at Oregon it's kind of a weird thing to have a coach leave so quickly, but that stuff happens. Getting to a Final Four for Oregon, it's been a long time since 1939 that had happened. So when you do something that you haven't done since the 30s, I think that's a pretty safe pick to be your story of the year.
Now, regarding football, if there had been less of a kind of punch-in-the-face ending to the season, let's say they beat Boise State by a touchdown and Willie Taggart stayed and there's, nothing along those lines, you think that would have sent it much farther down the list?
Yeah, it probably would have. It tends to be the case that whatever happens in the football season is one of the top two or three storylines of the year, because it's duck football.
Sure.
Everything kind of revolves around duck football, but there were a lot of other things this year, that were worthy of consideration there. And, the women's basketball team making the Elite Eight for the first time, that was a big deal.
Yep.
So the competition would have been much tougher, I think, if it had just been kind of a ho-hum finish to the football season, but the way it ended, obviously, that was a pretty big story.
As I was putting together some of these questions, it dawned on me that you're a Kansan Chiefs fan, I think, if I remember. The season started great, slumped, now they're rolling, career year for Alex Smith, they're in. So, how are you liking this team heading into the playoffs?
And I'm not feeling so good. I was feeling really good when they were 5-0, they'd beaten the Eagles and the Patriots, and then they just had this horrible stretch where they lost to the two New York teams, which this year, that's a real embarrassment on your record. And now they've kind of gotten it back together. They've won 3 in a row, and they won at home to clinch the division this past week. But, to me, this looks like basically every Chiefs playoff team of the last 20 years where, if they win one game, you'll be happy. And there's a pretty good chance that they'll be one and done. Yeah, they'll probably end up playing the Ravens at home. They could win that. I could see them getting out of the first round. But then, in some order, they've probably got to go to Pittsburgh and to New England after that. I don't like their chances there.
All right, couple final thoughts for Austin Meek of the Register Guard. So, Georgia-Oklahoma. Sooners with the Heisman winner. Bulldogs just season two under Kirby Smart. Probably there faster than anybody anticipated. You know, they got Nick Chubb. I know you call all the games in your bowl piece. Where are you leaning here?
Well, it's kind of strength against strength, you know. I'm not sure Oklahoma has seen a defense the caliber of Georgia's. I'm not sure Georgia has seen an offense the caliber of Oklahoma. So I think it's going to be a really entertaining game. I feel that way about both of the playoff semifinals. You know, it's kind of interesting. There's only been one semifinal game in the 3 years it's been decided by single digits.
Yep.
They've pretty much all been blowouts. You know, we've had a 38-0. I think we had a 31-0. But when I look at both these games this year, the two semifinals, I think they ought to be both really competitive games. I mean, they'll probably both be 30-point blowouts, but you know, I think on paper this is as evenly matched a playoff bracket as there have been in the 4 years we've been doing this. So I expect that Oklahoma-Georgia game to come down to, you know, the last possession. But I always lean toward the side, when in doubt, of the better quarterback. And I just think, you know, I would trust Baker Mayfield if he's got the ball in his hands on the last drive to go win the game.
Yeah, a Heisman winner against a true freshman. And then I'll tell you what, I dare Alabama and Clemson to give us a third game like the first two. The odds makers have it, you know, I guess Alabama, you could say, has healed a bit. Which way do you have this one going?
Well, I think that's a good point, and I think you can make the case that Alabama actually has benefited by not playing in the SEC championship game for a couple of reasons. Number one, it gave them time to get healthy. Alabama was pretty banged up by the end of the season, so that extra time off, I'm sure, was helpful. And also, I think it, you know, just psychologically, I think Nick Saban probably does not mind this position that they're in. I'm sure that he's put together a clip of every pundit who said Alabama doesn't belong in the playoff because they didn't even win their own division. I'm sure the players on the team will have heard that many times by the time they take the field. And the combination of the disappointment of not making the SEC title game and the disappointment of losing to Clemson last year in the national championship game, I think both of those things are probably factors that work in Alabama's favor this time around. So, I don't know. I think it'll be a good game. I don't think it'll be as high scoring as last year's. But I lean a little bit toward Alabama.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to these games. And beyond the specifics, with the Rose Bowl hosting a playoff, I mean, for traditionalists, we get Pac-12, Big Ten, kind of twice. Washington, Penn State, USC, Ohio State. You know, four teams didn't miss the playoffs by that much. So while it doesn't have national title implications, how interesting do you think those games are?
Well, I think they're both pretty important for the Pac-12. Looking up and down that Pac-12 bowl slate, I didn't see a ton of games, you know, that you say the Pac-12 team is the favorite. And I saw several where the Pac-12 team is probably the decided underdog. You know, USC is a touchdown underdog against Ohio State, which I thought was a little bit high. But the Pac-12 could really make a statement in those two games, because the Pac-12 was really the first major conference that was basically eliminated from the playoff conversation.
Sure.
USC got a little bit of attention late, but, you know, it was pretty much a given for the last month of the season that the Pac-12 was not going to have a team in the playoffs. So then if you put two Pac-12 teams in the New Year's Six and they both get blown out by Big Ten teams, that's a pretty disappointing year all around for your conference. But on the other hand, if USC goes out there and beats Ohio State, if Washington beats Penn State, then those are two pretty, you know, pretty good-looking wins you can put on the resume and say, okay, maybe we didn't have a playoff team or a national championship caliber team this year, but the two teams on the top of our totem pole were pretty good.
Yeah, that's an interesting take, and they should be fun games. Well, when I have a friend or a colleague who's on the move and traveling, I always say travel safe. You'll understand if I put a little more emphasis on it in this case. And I wish you and your family safe travels, an enjoyable one, and I'll look forward to chatting you up in the new year.
All right, sounds good. We got 3 hours to go, so we're on the home stretch. I think we're going to make it, but I appreciate your concern.
All right. Have a good one, Austin.
Okay, you too.
Take it easy.